This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We start the Friday news review with a look at a whirlwind week in Kentucky. And joining us on the phone now, our Louisville Courier-Journal reporter, Joe Sonka. Joe, thanks for coming back on.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
And Lexington Herald leader reporter, Daniel DeRochers, is also with us on the line. Daniel, thank you for being back with us as well.
Yeah, no problem. I'm trying to multitask right now, so if you hear background noise, that's my fault.
That's okay. All of us in the news business right now understand multitasking way better than we ever did before this pandemic, so you are completely excused. I want to start by talking out about this, I guess, month of a week we've just had in Frankfort. Joe, let's start with talking about the protest we saw this week, some people showing up at the Capitol demanding that Kentucky, quote, reopen, and Andy Beshear, the governor's reaction to that. Joe, what did you see at these protests?
Well, it was Wednesday. There were about 100 people outside protesting. They were wanting an immediate opening of businesses. Some speakers even calling on businesses to open in defiance of Governor Beshear's emergency orders. About an hour after that protest started, Governor Beshear gave his daily 5 p.m. briefing on kind of updating the status of COVID-19 in the state, announcing how many new cases there are, how many new deaths there were, various updates. And at the beginning of the briefing, you could faintly hear some people still protesting in the background, some chants, and then eventually got louder. Then eventually the protesters realized, oh, this is the actual room where Beshear is holding the briefing. So they were blowing horns, chanting into a megaphone, basically to the point where I could barely hear Beshear, and I was sitting 10 feet in front of him. And it got through on the video feed, so it was a big deal. And Beshear said, you know, I understand people upset, but you know, I'm trying to save lives, and if we open businesses right away, people would die. So that was his reaction that day.
You could definitely hear a lot of that shouting through the streams, and I know reporters from both of your publications, including yourselves, were out there getting video. It was quite a sight to see on social media as it was taking place. Daniel, you saw this as well. Talk about what you saw.
Yeah, so I was kind of out there during the press conference. I was not in the press conference. And, you know, it was, I think the thing that I noticed right away was that it was a little bit of a familiar crowd. The actual sponsor, the person who was hosting it, was one of the people who had made claims that Governor Bevin had actually won the election, but there was voter fraud, you know, these unfounded claims about voter fraud in Kentucky after the November election, this woman named Erica Callahan. And so you saw a lot of Tea Party flags, you saw, you know, Trump shirts, you saw a lot of that. It was this kind of like Liberty Tea Party wing of the Republican Party / Libertarian Party. And so it was like, it was an organized protest. It was actually a lot more organized than I thought it would be. But it was, sorry, I'm trying to grab pictures of protesters right now because they're doing a drive-through protest as we speak.
That's okay. Where is that protest taking place that you're seeing right now, Daniel?
At the Capitol. So instead, because they put up a barricade and they put up these caution flags, the protesters, instead of they were breaking social distancing rules. They had all tried, you know, some of them were wearing masks. They had started by trying to spread out over the lawn. But over the course of the protest, they basically bunched together, right? So they were breaking these rules that have been put in place by the Department of Public Health. And so now they are driving around and honking their horns. There's probably about, you know, we're about an hour into the protest, so there's probably about 15 cars, maybe less, 10 cars that are still going around. And they're just doing a loop around the Capitol. And honking the whole time through.
Okay. Well, Joe, I read in the Courier today from your colleague, Philip Bailey, that there was some sort of Facebook effort to create a caravan. Is that what Daniel is seeing, apparently?
Yeah, that's the same. Yeah. That's what's happening today. And some of the commenters were calling for gridlock, totally having gridlock in the Capitol, saying there would be so many cars there. It doesn't sound like that's happening from what Daniel is saying today.
It is not happening based on that right now.
Okay, so a small turnout so far for what's happening. I will note, Joe, that it looks like on Thursday there weren't protesters. So just yesterday, between Wednesday and Friday, when there are protests taking place, there wasn't anything. But the briefing room got a little bit of a makeover before the governor's next briefing. Talk about the precautions or extra steps that the administration took, I guess, to quiet any potential protesters down.
Yeah, well, it was both inside and outside. They had taken yellow tape and kind of taped off the area where the protesters had gone up on the Capitol grounds outside the building, right outside the window. And there were about eight state police troopers right outside where the protesters were that day. And on the inside, they added new soundproofing on the windows. So just in case anyone showed up again, there wouldn't be the same situation where people could hear the protesters over the governor as he was giving his briefing, because it was really striking Wednesday that Governor Beshear was solemnly stating how many new cases they had, how many new deaths they had, announcing seven new deaths, and you could hear people chanting, calling him a tyrant and a king, almost drowning him out as he was doing that. Kind of sounded like a party atmosphere. There was cheering once the person on the megaphone would read out, "Hey, they can hear us on the live feed." Like they're having trouble hearing the governor, they would like cheer. So they very much enjoyed the fact that they were really making their voices heard as the governor was doing this. But it looks like that's not going to be repeated. The public health director, Dr. Stack, he put out a statement basically saying because there was no social distancing, as Daniel mentioned, people were crowded up right next to each other shouting, which is a good way to get germs out if you're standing next to someone shouting really loudly. Because they weren't practicing social distancing, they had to make that move to not allow that to happen again.
Daniel, did any elected officials participate or offer any condonement of this activity?
Yes. Representative Savannah Maddox.
Yes, she's from up here in Northern Kentucky.
Yeah, and she's been a pretty vocal, publicly bristled at Governor Beshear's orders. And so she gave a whole speech about how this is, you know, that the people are going to need to stand up and defend themselves against the tyranny of the government right now. So she was the only elected lawmaker that actually made a speech at that first protest. But in the time since, and not in the time since, while people were speaking, there were, you know, the legislature was still in session. And so there were a bunch of Republican lawmakers that actually came out and were hanging out along the periphery. So you had these people who were kind of looking on. And then there was even one representative Derek Lewis, who actually got a DUI heading home from the Capitol that day. He was engaging with protesters. He was talking to them. I don't know whether or not he was trying to convince them or anything like that, but he was actually going through the crowd and talking to these people while they were there protesting Governor Beshear's restrictions.
And Daniel, I read in the Herald Leader about that state representative who got a DUI, and the article in your paper made an interesting note. I know you weren't the lead author on that, but it did say you contributed to it, so maybe you can help us understand this a little bit. Was it Derek Terry? Is that
Derek Lewis.
Derek Lewis, my apologies. Derek Terry is a guest I had on earlier this week. My apologies. Derek Lewis, state representative, he was headed from Lexington down to London and was charged with the DUI. But it's not that long of a drive from the time that the House adjourned to when he was stopped. So what are the implications of that?
So I don't have any concrete evidence about this, but the implications are either that as soon as they gaveled out, he started taking shots, or that he had been drinking for a period of time. It's about 40 minutes, I guess, from Frankfurt to London. And so he, you know, his car was in a ditch, so we don't actually know when he crashed his car. And so there was this, and then the state police found him there. And so there's, we don't really know a firm timeline, but it definitely appears that he was drinking in Frankfurt before he ended up driving home, either that or he was drinking in his car. It's just really hard because we don't have any hard evidence of that. We just kind of know what's in the citation and the fact that, you know, of course, he got picked up by state police.
And we should note that protests that we are talking about taking place in Frankfurt have taken place in other state capitals, including Columbus here in Ohio. And President Donald Trump is tweeting today, quote, "Liberate Minnesota" is one tweet. "Liberate Michigan" is another tweet, and liberate Virginia and save your great Second Amendment. It is under siege is another one. I'm seeing some commentary that perhaps Donald Trump is fanning some of these protests at this point. Joe, to the protesters' point about reopening the economy, the governor, along with governors in other states, noted that they are working towards some ideas to, quote, reopen the economies. Can you give us a little bit of the background on what Governor Beshear is talking about as it relates to that?
Right. He's supposed to give more details at 5 o'clock today, but he is joining a group of Midwestern states. The governors have all banded together, and they're going to have certain metrics and factors that are going to determine when they are able to open up the state and open up businesses and what that's going to look like. It sounds like it's going to be a process over a period of time, starting next month at some point. But they're basically going to look at how many cases each state has, how many people hospitalized in each state they have, what capacity they have for testing people and contact tracing people. So they're going to look at all those factors, and I think we're going to get more details on that soon. But Ohio is in that group, and Governor DeWine yesterday said that he wants to see things start to open back up on May 1st. I asked Beshear yesterday if that means that Kentucky will also be start to look at opening businesses back up May 1st. He didn't get a clear answer on that. He said by late May, early June, though, that we could expect that. But I assume we're going to get more details from that from him today in his 5 o'clock briefing.
And you're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm joined on the phone now by Courier Journal reporter Joe Sonka and Herald Leader reporter Daniel DeRochers. Daniel, give us a little bit of an idea of what it's been like as a journalist covering an active General Assembly session and the governor with daily responsibilities of addressing the public amid this COVID-19 pandemic. What does it look like from the reporter's perspective?
It's like drinking from a fire hydrant. you know, this has been probably one of the busiest times as a reporter that I've ever been, you know, because there's a lot of factors going on. I mean, you've got this, of course, you've got the legislature, you've got the governor who's making these announcements every day. But then there's other news stories that you're trying to pursue in relation to the coronavirus throughout. Plus, I've been doing a lot of tracking of the numbers, and the tracking of the numbers has been a involved process, to say the least. We get a PDF document from the governor's office, and so we have to kind of manually put in all that demographic information ourselves into Excel spreadsheets in order to actually get, you know, to glean any kind of information from the data beyond what the governor's just putting out there officially. And so, you know, with all of that, you know, it's basically been, you know, it's been a lot of long days. I don't think I've had like a full day off for at least since like March 5th. So it's been a lot.
It's been a lot, but it's been a valuable service for people. I hope that folks are recognizing the necessity of journalist work like what the two of you are providing out there. And I've had to learn, you know, here locally that the Northern Kentucky Health Department usually puts out its numbers as it relates to a 4-county region in Northern Kentucky, usually minutes after the governor's press conference. But the governor's numbers don't always line up with what the local health department is saying. So, Daniel, I know that you've noted this. What is the discrepancy in the way the governor releases numbers and then what the health department says so that we can avoid, you know, duplicating the number of deaths or the number of new cases that are confirmed?
Yeah, so it's really complicated because the governor gets information from private labs, but the county government or county health departments or local health departments are also getting numbers in a similar way. And so they, I've been actually relying more on the local health departments because when you look at the governor's list, sometimes he has duplicates, sometimes there is stuff that are coming in more than once. And so from day to day, like just yesterday, Livingston County fell off of the governor's list, even though it was put on there the day before. So a lot of that is because, you know, when they're looking at information about who's coming across, the state's looking at zip code, and zip code is difficult, or they're looking at where the person was tested rather than where the person is actually from. And so the local health departments actually have a little bit, or at least I've found up till now, have had a little bit more reliable information because they're the ones who are doing the contact tracing. They're the ones who are having to actually reach out to these people and their sources. So they need to know who's in what county and they have a little bit of a better track of it. And there's also just been some lag, right? So Mayor Greg Fisher, he reports the cases at 4 o'clock every day, and that's past when Bashir collects his information to release that information to the public. And so you'll always see his numbers be low pretty much in Louisville and sometimes in Fayette County as well, which is why his total is kind of lower overall than what we're actually seeing in the state.
And our guests now are Daniel DeRochers of the Lexington Herald Leader and Joe Sonka of the Louisville Courier-Journal. Joe, let's talk a little bit about Andy Bashir in this pandemic. He's a lot of governors are seeing a surge in popularity and perhaps even some loving tributes on social media. Andy Bashir's angle on that has been quite interesting to watch. He's got some new fans that are quite devoted to the way that he's handled this situation. I've seen a lot of comparisons to Mr. Rogers and sort of his bedside manner being described that way. But this week, we saw really for the first time since this started, some Republican pushback. So we're starting to see some partisanship enter the handling of this situation. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, definitely. And it all kind of happened at once Senator Mitch McConnell put out a statement that was critical of specifically, it was critical of Louisville's governor related to church services. Louisville's mayor Greg Fisher had put out something saying that drive-in church services would not be allowed because they were drive-in services that happened before where people had gotten out and have dumb people and congregated. So he wasn't going to allow that. Mitch McConnell put out a statement saying that that would be an infringement of religious liberty. And then you had more Republicans come out once Andy Bashir said that he would send state troopers out if there were churches doing an in-person services, like literally in-person service. They would have state troopers take their license plates, report that to the health department, and then have the health department enforce a 14-day quarantine for anyone who actually attended. Now, once that happened, then Republicans really came out of the woodwork to criticize Bashir, saying he was infringing on religious liberty. You had Republican Attorney General Daniel Cameron coming out and criticizing Bashir for allowing Kentucky's only abortion clinic in Louisville to continue operating, though there were elective surgeries in other areas were not allowed during the emergency order. So you've had more and more Republicans over the past week really coming out and starting to criticize Bashir, whereas the first couple of weeks of the emergency order after this, the only thing you were hearing from Republicans was really, hey, he's doing a good job, it's a tough situation. Now it's kind of open season, and it's kind of back to normal, really. And that kind of crescendoed into Wednesday when you had 100 people, you know, outside the briefing room trying to drown him out. So I don't know if Trump's going to do a Liberate Kentucky tweet later today like the other states that are run by Democratic governors, but every state you just mentioned there has a Democratic governor, so maybe there's like a Kentucky tweet coming too.
Well, the president, as of this moment, has only added New York to that list, so we'll keep an eye on what the president is tweeting if that develops while we're conversing here. But we should note, Joe, that the governor, Bashir, in his first term, really in his first few months of being the governor and as a Democrat, he's making a note nearly daily during these briefings to emphasize his religious bona fides. He's a deacon in his church, we hear a lot about. I think it was either this week or last week we heard about how his son was to be baptized on a recent Sunday and how sad his son was that this event that he'd been preparing for wasn't going to happen. How is that playing, the way that he's making sure that the public knows that he's a man of faith?
Well, I would love to see it's really anecdotal at this point because you hear a lot of people rallying around him and support him. You hear from a lot of Republicans and conservative people who have said, you know, I didn't vote for the guy, but I really think he's done a good job. But on the same side, you see the other side where you have, you know, legislator. There was a Republican on the Senate floor who denounced Bashir and said that he was letting the abortion clinic stay open because he got campaign contributions and said that the most dangerous place in Kentucky is inside a mother's womb during the COVID-19 crisis. So on the other side, the more socially conservative side, they haven't really warmed up to Bashir, and they seem to be attacking him more than ever now over abortion. But there's rumors that there's someone in the field in Kentucky right now doing a poll to see what Beshear's popularity is. I would be very interested to see what that is, because really it's anecdotal at this point from seeing stuff on social media.
That's right. Beshear has won 2 statewide elections in consecutive cycles, but both by pretty razor-thin margins. And I think he's noted himself that he's only been politically popular for a few weeks. But as you know, that's only anecdotal. We don't know exactly how popular. Daniel, there was some business to do this week before the General Assembly adjourned from its 60-day session, which was somewhat disrupted by the pandemic. We saw that the governor had overridden legislation that would have mandated photo IDs for voting in Kentucky, and then the legislature overrode that veto. Can you talk a little bit about what that means for voters in the state?
Yeah, so the bill would basically require you to have a picture ID when you show up to the polls, but it doesn't go into effect until November. So that was something that lawmakers were trying to argue, is that, look, it's not going to affect the June primary because this won't go into effect until November. But the governor has basically been saying, look, you don't want to be putting in any kind of restrictions on voting right now when we are in the middle of a pandemic. Because no matter what, at least in June and potentially in November, our election is going to look a lot different than it normally does because of all these social distancing restrictions. So yes, some stuff might be let up a little bit by June, but it's not going to be completely normal. And so it's going to get really complicated when they're trying to unveil these, you know, they're basically offering free photo IDs for anybody who requests one, but it's going to make it really difficult to get a hold of those. And it gets rid of a catch-all provision to, like, have an excuse for why you don't have a photo voter ID. It eliminated that when they were in between the Senate and the House, when they were in conference committee. And so that's also going to be difficult because you're going to have to photocopy a copy of your license when you mail it in, if you do a mail-in ballot. And not everybody has access to a photocopier or something like that. So basically, elections experts are really denouncing this because they're saying that when we're in the middle of this crisis, you shouldn't be passing anything that's going to add a higher burden for people to be voting right now.
Yeah, and I mean, it's strange because we're living in this time where the county clerk's offices are closed down, and that's usually where you would go to work on getting a license. And has there been any concern expressed about that?
There's been a lot of concern expressed about that. I mean, everything's closed, so there's been a ton of concern about, like, how will this even work when it is rolled out, especially because they were already saying that November was going to be tight for county clerks being able to adjust to this thing, even when there was not a pandemic going on. So, because you also have to educate people about it, and that's also going to be this entire effort that is, again, is really difficult when, you know, we've got these extraordinary circumstances going on.
Yeah, I lost my wallet a couple of weeks ago, so I don't currently have an ID. I'm driving illegally, I think. If I get stopped, I'm in trouble. And I thought, oh no, what am I going to do when it comes time to vote? So that will be interesting to see how that plays out. Joe, before we let you guys run, there is an election this year still, and though the primary has been moved in Kentucky, we've got a Democratic primary for the U.S. Senate. How is that race stacking up right now? How are they managing to find any oxygen in the news cycle?
Well, Amy McGrath, the front runner, certainly helped by having at least a dozen, at least $12 million, I think, maybe close to $14
million. She has $29.5
million. 29, so double that.
14 on hand. Yeah, $14 million on hand. She's a Scrooge McDuck-sized pool of money.
Yeah.
And this is, just to remind listeners, this is to face Republican incumbent Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell.
Yeah. Who also has a McDuck-sized pool of money.
Yes, so almost the exact same size, their war chest, during the last reporting period. And you have Democratic challengers, Mike Breuer and Charles Booker, who are really trying to compete with someone with $14 million. Meanwhile, they don't have anywhere near the amount of money, and they also can't go out and knock on doors and, you know, hold rallies because of the pandemic. So they're really they were already at a huge disadvantage because of the money advantage, and now they can't even do the kind of grassroots organizing that you would normally have for a candidate who was at a disadvantage because of campaign cash. So it's extremely difficult for them to both get on the air and get out there in the public and greet people.
Well, let me thank both of you for taking the time. I know how busy both of you are. I'm following you both on Twitter religiously to see what's happening in Frankfurt next. And that's Daniel DeRochers from the Lexington Herald Leader and Joe Sonka from the Louisville Courier Journal. Thanks to both of you for the time. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Up next, the impact of the pandemic on the Cincinnati hotel boom. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.